what you feel soaked with the tears because a baby's life has been revoked. The bond is broke, got so choked up and focused on the close up, missed our wheels, I can't reform. No God like Hocus Pocus, so don't sit back, kick back and watch the world get bushwhacked. News that's in your neighborhood is under attack. Put away the crack before the crack put you away. You need to be there when your baby's old enough to relay. Supplies are running out. Allow if you're still alive 6 to 8 years to arrive. And if you follow them, it be out tomorrow. But if the offer's shunned, you might as well be walking on the sun. You might as well be walking on the sun. You might as well be walking on the sun. You might as well be walking on the sun. You might as well be walking on the sun.
Good evening. You're listening to Canada on Cannabis, the show that believes the prohibition of marijuana is a crime against humanity. You're listening on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM. And I just checked, and it does appear to be broadcasting fairly well tonight. And streaming on the internet live at www.freakradio.org. That's freakradio.org. And if you go to that site, there's a word that says listen. You click on that and you can choose high bandwidth or low bandwidth. It really doesn't make any difference which bandwidth you pick, I don't think. Because this show is not broadcasting it's being transcribed in broadband. But anyway, there's a lot to talk about this week. I guess the biggest thing is the memo from the Obama administration, which I'll get to eventually toward the end of the show. I hope there's other things I wanted to talk about first. Let's see, what other business do I need to do? I have a blog, and I have an archive page for my previous shows, and in a couple of days I'll have this show up with notes on it, hopefully. And the address for my blog is www.palmspringsbum.org/blog. Palm Springs Bum is one word, palmspringsbum.org/blog, B-L-O-G. And actually, last week, on the 11th of May, there was a conference in Colorado, and it's about 2 hours long, about legalization. It was sponsored by... I got some notes here on that on my Facebook page for this show. As I said, if you go to my blog one more time, that's www.palmspringsbum.org/blog. In the right panel, you'll see a fan box, a Facebook fan box, and there's a scroll box in there with links about the things that. I and my various contacts, mostly on Facebook, have been talking about and discussing over the past week things of interest to me. And so you'll find links and videos there. And among them, actually, this is on the blog itself, my latest entry, www.palmspringsbum.org/blog. This was the Cannabis Therapy Institute conference in Denver, and so I've got the video here in my last article there. Today, actually, is when I published it. I had intended to publish it a couple of days ago and got distracted. But anyway, so I've got notes on this. Dennis Perrone... now, this is not the same. There was controversy about this because I believe it was Sensible Colorado, Mason Tevert, And another organization and Marijuana Policy Project had agreed to attend this debate before they launched any initiatives. And the three of them launched 8 ballot initiatives, filed them in Colorado, MPP, the Marijuana Policy Project. And so there was quite a bit of controversy regarding this organization. They had on 420. Normal had a conference in Denver. I viewed some of the videos from that, and it looked like the only people that attended were the speakers. There wasn't anybody in the audience. There was a lot of... Dennis Perrone, the same person as Cannabis Therapy Institute, and Miguel Lopez, who's been very active in Colorado, had invited Dennis Perrone to speak on 420, and he was going to speak against tax and regulate. And so Tim Martin launched a smear campaign against Perrone, calling him a pedophile, and that he was not a person to represent the movement. They didn't want him to speak in Denver. And Dennis ended up not going. Tim Martin and John Doe Radio ended up getting the concession to broadcast, the normal conference in Denver. So anyway, Robert Corey has been, I've been following Colorado as closely as I can. It's difficult. There's so much to keep up with. I can't begin to keep up with it all. But Robert Corey has done some of the best writing. He's been spot on as far as I'm concerned in his criticism of the politics and the laws and what's going on. And he is the first panelist on this video here. It's a Ustream video, by the way, and it may or may not work well in Firefox. I haven't tried to listen to it here on my blog page, but that's where it is. But if you go to the Ustream page, don't try to use Firefox. Ustream just doesn't work in Firefox. It works as it's supposed to in Internet Explorer. It works so-so in Chrome. But anyway, so I've got the notes from this conference here published on my blog now. I published them today. And there's a link for the video. And I just wanted to read this quote by Robert Corey. And this is about 36 minutes into the video. It says, "We had our own movement, some elements of our movement, against us, the normal organization. Legislators see normal as speaking for our entire movement, and if that were the case before, that is no longer the case with the defeat of this 1261 bill. Not even close. That is a supposedly pro-marijuana organization endorsing a hunting season on medical marijuana patients." Now, this is probably one of the most respected marijuana lawyers and marijuana and medical marijuana advocates in Colorado speaking here, folks. Just wanted to touch on that briefly before I get on to other things. And by the way, before I forget it, as I said on my blog, there's an archive page for this show. And if you you can get to it either from my blog up in the top right, there is a menu that says Home, Broadcast, Bookshop, and Contents. And if you click on Broadcast, it will take you to the archive page for my previous radio shows. And also you've got notes and everything and links and quite a bit of information there. Or you can just type in www.palmspringsbum.org/blog/CANADA-ON-CANNABIS. That's Canada on Cannabis. There's been a couple of stories on housing that I wanted to go into a bit here. One is in Canada, and it's a lady named Christina Gulak. I assume, let me see if I can find that story real quick, because there were a couple of stories I did want to bring up on that. Okay, here it is. This was published in Cannabis News, and there's a link for that on my Palm Springs Bum page for this show. And this was published on the 25th, I think, of June. Yes, it was posted on the 25th of July. Just today, actually, I guess. And it's titled, Federal Exemptee Fights Weed Smoke-In Eviction. An Esquimalt woman says a local social housing organization is trying to evict her from her home of 2.5 years for using cannabis to treat her chronic conditions. Christina Golick, who suffers from debilitating arthritis and lupus and has Health Canada permission to possess and use medical cannabis, says she is the target of a campaign by the state manager of the Greater Victoria Housing Society's Lions Lodge to rid the building of marijuana smokers, many of whom, says Golick, are elderly and disabled and consume the drug to treat a variety of maladies. Quote, I've never gotten any real legal advice, and so don't really know where I stand, says the 58-year-old. I'm just sort of bobbing in the ocean alone, and really everyone's looking on to see what's going to happen, because it will be a major victory for the medical marijuana community if I get the right to stay. On April the 29th, Golick was issued a one-month notice to end tenancy for cause on the grounds that her behavior, which Golick says is limited to smoking cannabis, significantly interfered with or unreasonably disturbed another occupant or the landlord, and that her actions seriously jeopardized the health or safety or lawful right of another occupant or the landlord. While the particulars are not spelled out in the documents Golick provided Monday, she says the matter hinges on a complaint, real or fabricated, about the smell of marijuana emanating from her apartment where she smokes. But Golick says that her door is sealed to BC Hydro standards and she jams a mat under it when she lights up. There's a ventilation system immediately outside her door that circulates the air in the hallway, as well as a window usually left open immediately adjacent to her apartment, which is at the end of a corridor. Despite what Golick says are her ongoing attempts to mitigate any odor emanating from her apartment, documents served by the landlord insist that, quote, a breach of material term of the tenancy was not corrected within a reasonable time after written notice to do so. A further twist to Golick's story is the fact that Lions Lodge is a smoke-friendly building, which is to say residents are permitted to puff tobacco to their heart's content inside their units. Golick missed her initial residential tenancy branch arbitration hearing on the matter, citing a dispute with a neighboring tenant that aggravated her conditions and made it impossible to attend. At that point, Golick was given 2 days to vacate the apartment and faced homelessness. The residential tenancy branch has granted her another opportunity to appeal her eviction, but the boxes remain packed in her apartment if her pleas should fall on deaf ears. A letter from Golick's physician, Dr. Daniel Bowie, to the Housing Society hints at the toil the ongoing eviction is taking on his patient. Quote, this decision seems totally unfair and is definitely very detrimental to the health of this seriously ill woman. Please reconsider. I would be willing to discuss this with any officials, reads Bowie's missive. Greater Victoria Housing Society Executive Director K. Mellership would not comment on the specifics of Golick's case, citing privacy concerns. She did, however, add, all I can say is that perhaps you are not getting all of the story. We have a good process. As a landlord, we use the Residential Tenancy Act and all the procedures and policies of the Residential Tenancy Act, and we are using that. And we strongly encourage our tenants to participate in that as well, because it can often result in some good outcomes. But people have to make choices, and sometimes they don't always want to participate. Al Kemp, CEO of the Rental Owners and Managers Society of BC, says the RTB adjudicator hearing Golick's appeal will be less concerned about her medication regime than how it affects her cohabitants. Quote, it's not really whether you're allowed to smoke, says Kemp. It's whether or not your smoking disturbs other tenants. and the wording in the Residential Tenancy Act that's relevant is seriously disturbs other tenants' quiet enjoyment. The bottom line is that she may have a federal exemption permitting her to smoke, but she does not have in that certificate permission to disturb other tenants. Philip Lucas, a Victoria City Councillor and former Executive Director of the Vancouver Island Compassion Society, has planted himself in Golock's corner. He says he will attend her appeal hearing in an effort to educate the adjudicator about current legislation governing the use of medical cannabis for federal exemptees. If it was a non-smoking building, she would be at the losing end of this argument, says Lucas. But because it's a tobacco-smoking building, and if she was smoking tobacco rather than cannabis, there would be no issue at all. That creates a big problem for me in terms of her personal rights and her medical needs. Lucas continues, quote, I just see this as a wrongful eviction of a chronically ill woman who is in her full legal rights to be using a medicine that, yes, is controversial, but quite frankly, that deserves some level of sympathy, compassion, and understanding from the Greater Victoria Housing Society. And this was in Canada, folks. Now, I just want you to pay attention here to the defense that this man is proposing. He's saying that because this is exactly the kind of thing that would happen with these finger-wagging, no-no naysayers here in Santa Cruz, these whining complainers about everything. I wonder how in the hell they ever make it through fire season. You'd think if they had such a problem with smoke that the fire season would kill them all off or they'd move somewhere else. But anyway, yes, that's how I feel. But anyway, pay attention to his defense here. He says, if it was a non-smoking building, she would be at the losing end of this argument. But because it's a tobacco-smoking building, and if she was smoking tobacco rather than cannabis, there would be no issue at all. That creates a big problem for me in terms of her personal rights and her medical needs. Well, will the courts agree? Probably not. I bring this up because there's another case in Washington. It seems that this week, in honor of the 4th of July, both Canada and the United States of America are starting to throw the sick and dying out of public housing. Yeah, there was a case up in Washington, but before I get to that, there was another case in Canada, Murnau case, which actually a day after this case was decided, overturning the restrictions imposed by Health Canada on medical marijuana patients that they've been complaining about for years, Canada made it illegal to grow your own. Did you hear that, folks? Canada has made it illegal for medical patients to grow their own. Now, this is all part of an international strategy to turn cannabis over to the pharmaceutical companies and to big business and to make it illegal for people to grow their own and then to force them to buy from these government outlets. As you will see, that's also what's happening here in the U.S. That's what appears to be unfolding before our very eyes. Unfortunately, it appears that Normal is collaborating with the government in this effort to take marijuana away from the people, and in a time when it's going to become increasingly necessary as medicine to, I guess, squeeze as much as they can out of people for it. Anyway, if you haven't heard, there was a huge Supreme Court decision in Canada recently, Matt Murnau. And this article was published today, July the 3rd, Sunday. It's called Ontario's Burning Pot Controversy, and it was in the Toronto Sun. And I'm going to take a sip and read this article for you. Because it pretty much nicely sums up some of the recent events in Canada, which are very significant. And if you have to spend a lot of time, but you see here pieces of a puzzle. If you look around the world at what's happening in Amsterdam and so on and so forth, and the Netherlands and just around the world, Anyway, Ontario's highest court, and again, I said this is in the Toronto Sun. The title of it is Ontario's Burning Pot Controversy. It was published July 3rd, 2011 at 1:56 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. As a matter of fact, it's fairly fresh. Ontario's highest court will review a landmark decision in November which deals with Canada's troubled medical marijuana program and legalization of production and possession of pot. Matthew Murnau, a frail-looking St. Catharines man with myriad health problems, 2 months ago scored an enormous victory when Justice Donald Taliano ruled the marijuana program unconstitutional. The judge gave Ottawa until middle of this month to repair the medical marijuana access regulations, and that's MMAR, or pot would be effectively legalized in Ontario. A doctor's overwhelming refusal to participate in the medical marijuana program completely undermines the effectiveness of the program, Taliano wrote in his ruling. The mid-July deadline was recently extended when federal government lawyer Kevin Wilson successfully agreed the need for the current pot laws and regulations to stay in place until Ontario's highest court could hear the appeal, likely in November. In granting the deadline extension, Court of Appeals Justice Robert Blair noted, quote, the practical effect of the decision, if the suspension were permitted to expire on July 14th, would be to legalize marijuana production in Ontario, if not across Canada. In an interview, Wilson said the regulations are not at fault. It's the decisions of the individual doctors. Toronto law professor Alan Young, who has fought some major marijuana court cases, described Murnau's case as a difficult one. It's about the doctors. It's not about the government, he said. There is no constitutional rights in having a doctor properly educated. We all knew that doctors would be reluctant. To what extent is the government complicit in the reluctance of doctors to participate? That's the issue, he added. Murnau's lawyer Paul Lewin has told the court there are about 400,000 Canadians using marijuana for therapeutic purposes, including people suffering from HIV, multiple sclerosis, and epilepsy. The number of licensed medical marijuana users is far lower than Lewin's statistics. In the first 10 months of last year, Health Canada received 7,385 applications for medical pot licenses and granted them to 4,650 people. The federal government, meanwhile, has announced that medical marijuana users will be prohibited from growing their own weed and will have to obtain the drug from licensed commercial producers under a new national marijuana supply program. Now, somewhere there's articles about the flim-flam mining disaster. What happened was Health Canada was going to grow marijuana for these medical marijuana patients because they determined if they had a right to it, for their health reasons, then the government was obligated to supply them. And so they picked this, they decided to grow marijuana in a mine, a zinc and nickel mine out on the fringes of civilization in Flin Flon. That's the name of the place, Flin Flon. Deep in the ground with no wind and hair, in air full of heavy metals. Actually, I wrote an article about that, which I'm not going to read right now because I'm actually going to talk about how the U.S. grows it. But before I do that, I was talking about housing, and I just wanted to talk about Canada. Anyway, I think it's on Cannabis News, but somewhere there's an article. I think there were 735 people who received marijuana from the Flim Flam mining disaster, and 300 of them, I believe, returned it. They said it was crap, it was unsmokable. They radiated the stuff to kill mold. Get this, folks. Now, they grow it in a mine, and then they radiate it to kill mold. They grow it underground in the dark. I could go on and on about how ridiculous that was. It was set up to fail. And I don't think that Canada has given any indication that it has a clue how to grow marijuana or actually does want to grow good medicine. It does seem that they are doing everything they can to prevent the establishment of medical marijuana, and have been for a long time. Of course, that's not in common. Look who their neighbor is down south. It's us. So when you think about Canada as being liberal and progressive and ahead of the United States, keep in mind that they have 7,000-something registered medical marijuana patients in the entire country of Canada. Meanwhile, Normal recently sent out a press release saying that there were at least 750,000 medical marijuana patients in California, and probably more. They said up to 1,125,000, so let's call it 1,000,000. That sounds about right to me. Another article that came to my attention is about some things that have been happening in Washington State, and this is regarding housing. You know, I told you I was going to talk about housing in Canada, but I just wanted to give you sort of an update of the big events as far as marijuana, medical marijuana in Canada. Before I went on to this article here, this is called "This Bud's Not for You," and it appears in the, what is the name of this, Willamette Week. And it was published the 29th of June, 2011. It's by Corey Paul. Again, the title is "This Bud's Not for You." Tenants are told they can't use medical marijuana in public housing. If you remember in previous shows, I talked about a memo that was sent out regarding housing to Colorado. And I think there was another memo sent out since then. So they've been... So they're throwing the poor and old people on this, people who live in subsidized housing, throwing them out in the streets if you're a medical marijuana patient now. Happy 4th of July. Doesn't the Obama administration know how to really celebrate the 4th of July? And Santa Cruz, too. Maybe we'll get to that later, that 100-plant bust on the heels of the federal memo. How about that, folks? That's 100 plants. That's like, you know, there's this rule of thumb, you know, anything. If you've got 99 or less plants, the feds aren't going to bother you. But right here in Compassion Central, right after the Obama memo, which I'm going to get to at the end of the show, right after that, Santa Cruz just happens to bust this 100-plant grow, which it claims to be medical. Imagine that. Right here in Compassion Central, liberal USA. By the way, we got call-in numbers here. They're 831-427-3772 and 831-469-3119. If you want to call in to talk about some stuff. Anything I'm talking about here, basically anything you want to talk about. If you know anything about this bust at the Good Guys Diesel Shop here in Santa Cruz, I'd like to have you call in and talk about that. Granny Perps. And their problems and stuff like that. I'd like to hear about it. And by the way, does Santa Cruz, did they ever license? I know they were going to license two grows, one for each of the dispensaries. I looked up the code sections that Santa Cruz has regarding dispensaries the other night. I noticed they had set like a 3,000 square foot maximum size on a grow. And if you notice, the article said it was not one of those that was licensed. I guess the dispensaries can license certain people to grow. What a nice job that would be, huh? Too bad. Yours truly, a medical marijuana patient who was homeless for 3 years, couldn't get a job like that. Tell you what. No, I'm living in somewhere where I couldn't possibly grow. The wiring wouldn't handle the lights or the anything. But anyway, we're talking about housing and the federal government throwing sick and dying medical marijuana patients out in the street. So this is in Washington. This Bud's Not for You, 29th of June, 2011, Willamette Week. Two of the city's public housing agencies have told their tenants they cannot smoke medical marijuana in their apartments and houses. The warnings from Reach Community Development and Home Forward, formerly known as the Housing Authority of Portland, have drawn a line for the first time as the federal government continues to apply pressure to limit use of medical marijuana in Oregon. Oh, this is Oregon, not Washington. Sorry about that. Home Forward has started telling tenants of its 6,200 units that smoking medical marijuana in their residences could get them evicted, even if they have been given prior permission to do so. But they can use medical marijuana in other forms. The letter says the ban will start in November. Reach has gone a step further, telling residents they cannot use medical marijuana in any form if their unit receives a federal subsidy or if they rely on Section 8 housing voucher, also funded by a federal program. Reach officials didn't return calls from WW. But Diane Quast, Home Forward's director of real estate, says her organization has been waiting for federal guidance out of fear it would violate state law if it denied tenants the right to use medical marijuana, or federal law if it allowed such use. She says Home Forward simply decided to fold marijuana into its general non-smoking policy, which it put in place a year and a half ago. We were stuck between two laws, Quast says. The housing provider's notices follows a series of warnings to states from U.S. attorneys, including Oregon's Dwight Holton, that medical marijuana dispensaries may violate federal drug laws. It's really disappointing, and I'm not sure, frankly, that it's lawful or constitutional, says Leland Berger, a lawyer who helped draft Oregon's medical marijuana law and now represents patients and providers statewide. It wouldn't surprise me to see more litigation. Marijuana is still illegal under federal law, and that's meant federal agencies and U.S. prosecutors have been at odds with state and local governments in the 16 states and District of Columbia where the drug is approved for use. Early in the Obama administration, U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder said the U.S. Justice Department would not interfere with medical marijuana operations under state law. But this year, the Justice Department signaled a change, telling governors of medical marijuana states it would do more to police the drug's use. The U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, or HUD, sent a memo in January to organizations it subsidizes, says Donna White, national spokeswoman for the agency. In Oregon, those agencies run about 44,000 housing units, home to between 88,000 and 132,000 people. In the memo, HUD leaves the decision to evict medical marijuana users to housing providers, but it forbids them from granting reasonable accommodation for its use. Reasonable accommodation protects people with a disability from eviction. Until now, that included anyone with a medical marijuana card. Home Forward says it won't seek any evictions. Reach's ban on medical marijuana in any form in its HUD-subsidized properties could mean users would be kicked out. HUD also directs housing providers to deny applicants who disclose they use medical marijuana. For Home Forward, that means it must also deny such applicants for Section 8 vouchers, which subsidize rent for private properties. So we simply don't ask, Quast says. Leland Jones, HUD's regional spokesman in Seattle, says the memo stems from his agency's efforts to clarify federal policy toward medical marijuana as states expand its use. It's important that all partners receiving federal assistance know what our rules of the game are, Jones says. Some housing providers were probably confused before the memo, he adds. Some still are. Human Solutions is a Portland-based nonprofit that accepts Section 8 vouchers, but officials there don't know what the policy means for them. We are aware of the ruling, but it was unclear from our point of view whether it was imposed on us, says Gene DeMaster, Human Solutions Director. As a result, we'll continue to serve people who use medical marijuana as long as they have the marijuana card. It's very discouraging to see this. Well, happy 4th of July here in the land of the free and the home of the brave. If you're old and sick and poor, where you get thrown out in the street for smoking your medicine. Oh, you know, it's like it takes so much more. It costs so much more edibles. And the fact is that for many things, it just doesn't work. You can't tighten your dose. You either get too much or not enough. With edibles, you're never one toke over the line. You're like 20 tokes over the line or 15 tokes under the line, but you're never one toke over the line with edibles. Never. I don't like the way that they don't work well for me. They don't work well for a lot of people. And this is just crap. And it makes me very angry and depressed and so on and so forth. Okay, I talked about in previous shows the Beltco case. This was in Washington, I believe. Let's see if I can get something up about this on the screen real quick. Or maybe it was Bletco. Here we go. It was Bletco, by the way. This is not a very long article. And I'd mentioned this last week. It was, but this article is published June the 27th, and it's in CalCoastNews.com, and it is testimony shines light on medical marijuana battle. A former Atascadero resident testified Thursday that large marijuana growers hide behind the cover of medical marijuana while growing hundreds of pounds of illegal weed to sell for big bucks on the black market. Let me just read ahead a minute. And okay, yeah, it does present the other side of this. I wanted to make sure it was the right article. Quote, "Everybody's in this for the money. Don't let anybody fool you," Thomas Bletco, 51, testified in Josephine County Circuit Court in Oregon. Quote, "It's all done under the guise of being medical." Now, this is a guy from Atascadero, so you people, if anybody knows about, has heard any dirt from this guy in Atascadero, you might want to call these people's attorneys. Bletco and Brenda Thomas, the manager of the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation Clinic in Grants Pass, and this is in Oregon, were licensed to produce 19.5 pounds of marijuana. Oregon State Police arrested Thomas and Bletco after they seized 200 pounds of pot valued at about $500,000 from Thomas' farm in Grants Pass, Oregon. Quote, "You don't grow $500,000 worth of pot for medical patients," Bletco said. Bletco turned state's evidence in exchange for no jail time and 18 months of non-supervised probation for testifying against Thomas. The foundation, headed by longtime Portland marijuana activist Paul Stanford, has clinics in 9 states where doctors examine patients looking for state authorization to use pot to treat medical conditions, NECN reported. Under Oregon's medical marijuana law, patients can have someone else grow pot for them, but growers cannot charge patients for the marijuana they produce. They can only collect for expenses, such as electricity and fertilizer, NECN said. Prosecutors contend Bletco and Thomas planned to provide a small amount of pot of the pot to patients. They said the remainder was to be sold illegally, with Bletco and Thomas planning to split the profits. Thomas argues that she had no idea Bletco was growing more marijuana than permitted. She says that Bletco had not offered to split the illegal profits with her. Medical marijuana advocates contend Thomas is being railroaded by anti-medical marijuana members of law enforcement. In addition, critics of Bletco's plea agreement question if his brother's role as the district attorney of a neighboring Oregon county swayed prosecutors to offer Bletko a deal. Thomas defense attorney Foster Glass said that Bletko has regularly moved in on women to grow marijuana and refused to leave. Under subpoena, Atascadero resident Cindy Sasser is slated to testify on Tuesday that Bletko grew more plants than he was legally permitted to while renting a home from her in Atascadero while she was working out of town. Bletko received a medical marijuana card from San Luis Obispo based doctor Atsuka Reese in 2008. He then took three Atascadero residents to Reese and purchased medical marijuana cards for $450, which listed him as their caregiver. Sasser told Calcos News she discovered Bletko had more marijuana at her home than the law allowed and threatened to call authorities. Bletko allegedly fought back, threatening to tell people half the pot was hers. Sasser said she was able to remove him from her home shortly thereafter. Meanwhile, in January, while on probation, Bletko was arrested in Northern California on felony charges of transporting hashish for sale across state lines. He is scheduled for a July 19 preliminary hearing. And for those of you who follow the marijuana news, this is an attack on Paul Stanford. Paul Stanford recently was being audited. His income taxes, evidently one of his accountant took the records or did something wrong, and so they were reconstructing them. And so he had to pay like $200. I have discussed this in recent shows. He was convicted of a misdemeanor, paid $200 or so in fines and a few hours of community service, and the feds, the IRS, sent out a huge press release that they had convicted him of tax fraud, a misdemeanor, I guess. Actually, he was trying to pay them and work it all out, and they just jumped the gun. So it looks like Stanford, they're trying to get him now another way here. Montana judge blocked implementation of legislation that Montana passed, which would have pretty much destroyed their medical marijuana industry and medical marijuana in that state. And there's a good quote by this judge. If I can pull it up fairly quickly here, hopefully. And get the article up. I want to read this article about the Montana thing. Hopefully this is it. Okay, this is Fox News, of all things. 30th of June 11, the title is Judge Blocks Parts of Montana Medical Marijuana Law. And it's Dateline Helena, Montana. A judge on Thursday blocked Montana from prohibiting commercial medical marijuana operations, saying that ban on profits from pot sales will restrict access to patients and deny people the right to seek health care. Don't you wish some California judges had as much sense? Carmen Trutnich comes to mind, and Steve Cooley down in Los Angeles trying to use the argument that you can't sell marijuana when Proposition 215 clearly says that it's supposed to be affordable. I know, how are you supposed to be affordable? How is it supposed to be affordable if you can't sell it? For that matter, how is it supposed to be affordable if it's got regressive excise and sales taxes on it? Answer me that one at $300 an ounce. But let's talk about Montana here for a minute. Judge blocks parts of Montana medical marijuana law. Again, this is on Fox News. June the 30th, 2011. A judge on Thursday blocked Montana for prohibiting commercial medical marijuana operations, saying that ban on profits from pot sales will restrict access to patients and deny people the right to seek health care. Helena District Judge James Reynolds issued a preliminary injunction against portions of a restrictive overhaul of the state's voter-approved medical marijuana law, which was due to take effect on Friday. One part of the law would have limited marijuana providers to distributing to a maximum of 3 patients and barred them from receiving anything of value for their product. Montana hasn't banned any other industries from receiving compensation for their goods and services. And the state has declared medical marijuana a legal product, Reynolds said in his ruling. A profit ban would limit the number of willing marijuana providers and deny patients, quote, this fundamental right of seeking their health care in a lawful manner, quote. Let's repeat that, quote, this fundamental right of seeking their health care in a lawful manner, quote. Quote, the court is unaware of and has not been shown where any person in any other licensed and lawful industry in Montana, be he a barber, an accountant, a lawyer, or a doctor, who, providing a legal product or service, is denied the right to charge for that service or is limited in the number of people he or she can serve, Reynolds wrote. Now, why the hell isn't there one damn judge in California that has that much sense? Reynolds also blocked provisions of the law banning advertising of medical marijuana, allowing unannounced searches of providers and requiring an investigation into any doctor who recommends marijuana for more than 25 patients a year. But he left other changes to the law in place, including stricter requirements of proof of chronic pain before a person can receive a registration card for that condition. The ruling means medical marijuana providers for now will continue to operate under many of the rules approved by voters in 2004 until the full case can be heard. Critics say the voter-approved initiative is riddled with loopholes and has allowed the industry to spin out of control. Montana has more than 30,000 medical marijuana users in a state with a population with just below 1 million. That's one of the highest rates among the 15 states that allow medical marijuana use. Critics say the law is too permissive and has created a booming retail industry that peddles a product considered an illegal drug under federal law. The overhaul passed by the 2011 state legislature followed an attempt to repeal medical marijuana use in Montana altogether, a bill that was vetoed by Governor Brian Schweitzer. Lawmakers approved the restrictive measures after federal agents in March raided more than 24 medical marijuana operations and warned state leaders that prosecutors will pursue anybody suspected of trafficking in the drug. The Montana Cannabis Industry Association sued the state after the bill was passed, saying the restrictions were an unconstitutional violation of the right to pursue good health. The group had asked the judge to block the entire law from taking effect Friday, and spokeswoman Kate Kaliwa said that blocking only portions of it makes things a little more messy. The ruling demonstrates the need to regulate medical marijuana instead of trying to get rid of it through backdoor ways, such as the law that was passed, Kaliwa said, but she had added access will be made more difficult for chronic pain patients. She said her group will move ahead with plans to gather signatures for a proposed referendum to block and repeal the law. State Department of Justice officials said in a statement that they were pleased Reynolds did not block the entire bill and that important provisions will still go into effect that should curb some of the worst abuses. Based on an initial review of the decision, however, we are concerned about the potential consequences of allowing providers to grow and sell marijuana to an unlimited number of cardholders, the statement said. In his ruling, Reynolds said the other provisions he blocked raised constitutional questions. The ban on advertising medical marijuana could impair freedom of speech, and the unannounced searches of registered premises were a possible violation of the protection against searches and seizures. He also said the additional checks on physicians was worrying because of testimonies from doctors, their reputations could be harmed, and they might stop certifying patients. Mike Smith, owner of the Healing Center, which provides medical marijuana for about 100 patients, said the judge's ruling is a victory for patients' rights. He said he hopes the results will ultimately be better changes in the law, which he believes is to open now. But Smith said he won't reopen his storefront yet. He changed his business model to delivery only after the March raids targeting medical marijuana operations. I'm not going to be hanging out on Main Street, but I will be caring for patients, Smith said. Part of a national strategy, government declaring war on medical marijuana patients, on the sick and dying, on the 4th of July. Dear old U.S. of A. There's also, you know, I talked last week about the events in Colorado and a bit at the top of the show, the quote by Robert Corey on May 11th saying normal does not represent patients and is, you know, I found earlier this article by couple of articles, actually, by Russ Belville. One of them attacking me by name. I hadn't seen it before. I was still letting that sink in. Boy, what a Tokyo Rose he is. Which I may get to later, but let's see. Let's talk about this events in Colorado here, because they also are appealing 1284, similar to what happened in Montana here with the legislature passing, basically giving you so many hoops to jump through that you could never jump through them all. And if you were, then you were just too healthy to be sick. I mean, no sick person could possibly jump through all these hoops. And talking about in Canada where they're saying telling patients they can't grow their own and they have to buy it from entity from the government, from a government grower, government designated grower. It sure would be nice if people weren't screaming out in the hallway while I'm trying to. Well, anyway. So in Colorado, it was announced that a lawsuit has been announced, and hopefully I can get to that in a minute. Bunch of noise out in the hallway here. I'm distracted. Excuse me, folks. Still looking for that article. You know what? Here's this article by Russ Belville. And he's talking about Miguel Lopez, as a matter of fact. This was published. Let me just read this for you. Russ Belville. This is Normal's outreach coordinator. And this article was published, it's on the Normal Stash blog, and it was published, and the Normal Stash blog is locking up my computer. Oh, it's unlocked it now. No, it's still locked. It's still locked. Still locked. Normal Stash blog is locking up my computer, folks. Okay, this is by Radical Rush Belville. Sorry, he's not radical, he's a reactionary. He's somewhat to the right of Attila the Hun. This was published on February the 16th, 2011, and the title of it is It Only Takes One Idiot, or How to Kill Marijuana Reform. One of the most difficult parts of our job at Normal is overcoming decades of stereotyping and propaganda about cannabis consumers. I guess that's why they love Cheech and Chong so much, huh? Anyway, Belville continues, we know that adults who consume cannabis regularly, 25 million adults annually, 15 million adults monthly, and 2.5 million adults daily, are regular folks who work hard, raise families, and pay taxes. So it is incredibly frustrating to see the hard work of so many dedicated activists dashed by idiotic actions of one whom claims to represent our best interests. With friends like these, our movement needs no enemies. We recently recounted the tale of Jason Christ in Montana, whose traveling medical marijuana caravans, internet video, medical exams, and antisocial behavior has legislators in the Big Sky State on the brink of the first ever repeal of a statewide marijuana law reform. A couple of years back, we told the tale of Dominic Vita in Connecticut, who on the eve of an important vote on a decriminalization bill, sent a threatening email to the state senator to oppose the bill. Dominic topped it off by wearing a T-shirt that said, "Well hung," in his booking photo. Now we get to add Miguel Lopez in Colorado to the list with video. What we have is a Colorado state Jerry Sonnenberg, a Republican who was sponsoring an amendment to a bill that would have ended the videotaping of Colorado patients as they purchased medical marijuana in a dispensary. Miguel Lopez is the person who asked Dennis Perrone to speak and is one of the person that put on this a conference that nobody from the big organizations wanted to attend, but who Robert Corey and a number of people, Robert Corey, a very prominent marijuana lawyer in Colorado, did attend, and a number of people follow. I'm sorry, I don't know what the fuck Normal is doing to my browser, but I'm closing that page. I'm not reading anymore. It's jumping around, and they're probably infecting me with some kind of virus. But just some of the venom that Belleville regularly spews. I mentioned this. I did read that for a reason, because with a recent Obama memo, it specifically states that Oakland is the reason that Obama has declared war on medical marijuana for the 4th of July. Basically, those four mega grows that those... They were going to try to take over the state marijuana market. These people behind Proposition 19, Richard Lee, Steve D'Angelo, Dale Sky, Claire Jones, the woman with too many names, who believes tomatoes are taxed in California, by the way, and Dale Sky, Claire Jones, who the chancellor, get this, folks, chancellor of Oaksterdam U. She works for Richard Lee. Richard Lee owns Oaksterdam U. She's married to Jeff Jones, who's with Richard Lee, was the other proponent of Prop 19. Now, Belleville is criticizing us. I happen to find articles today. Belleville mentioned me by name, calling us stoners against legalization. And, of course, Bill Panzer, very prominent marijuana lawyer, and other people have repeatedly said it wasn't legalization, it wasn't anything remotely like it. In fact, it was prohibition. It would have written so many things into law, it would have set back the movement 50 or 100 years, and that's what evidently they were hoping to do, and hand it over to the pharmaceutical companies with the help of Russ Belleville, who's attacking all of us, who are saying, read the initiatives. Read it like you were signing your soul to the devil. Read it like you were signing a contract in blood with the devil. That's how you should read these initiatives, folks. But we're bad people and traitors to the movement for saying things like that and pointing out what a piece of crap it was and how it would have made things so much worse. And speaking of piece of crap, Wilfred is now available on Hulu. But before I get to that, I wanted to talk about what was going on in Colorado. If I can find the article, I just happened to see this article by Belleville when I was looking for the article in Colorado. And will I find that anytime soon? Here it is, and this is titled, "Lawsuit Filed to Overturn Restrictive Colorado Medical Marijuana Laws." This is what I'm reading from here is the Weed blog. And it was published on the 30th of June, I believe. Patients and caregivers want new restrictions declared unconstitutional. A complaint was filed in Denver District on Thursday, June 30th, 2011, court asking the court to overturn large parts of laws passed by the Colorado legislature over the past 2 years. HB 10-1284 and HB 11-1043, because they restrict patient access to medicine and violate patient privacy rights guaranteed by the Colorado Constitution. These laws are set to go into effect on July 1st. The goal of the lawsuit is to restore constitutional protection that patients and caregivers enjoyed prior to the passage of these new laws. The new medical marijuana laws severely restrict caregivers from serving patients by limiting how many patients a caregiver can serve. Does that sound familiar, folks? And denying caregivers the right to charge for their services. Does that sound familiar, folks? The lawsuit asked the court for declaratory judgment on whether the Constitution allows a patient to choose any caregiver they wish. The lawsuit argues that no limits were set on caregivers in the Constitution, and that the patient has the ultimate right to decide who will provide his cannabis medicine. I just want to point out here that in Colorado, their medical marijuana law is a constitutional amendment. It is a part of the Constitution, Amendment 20, giving them a right, guaranteeing them a right to medical marijuana in their Constitution. This article I read, and there is a link for it on my Palm Springs Bum Facebook page. On my, you can go to get to that from the fan box on my blog. Has a link to the complaint if you want to read it. The complaint was filed by Andrew B. Reed, a prominent constitutional attorney who is senior counsel for Springer and Steinberg PC, a Denver law firm. The plaintiffs are Kathleen Chippy, Damian Lagoy, the Patient and Caregiver Rights Litigation Project, the Colorado Patient Alliance, the Rocky Mountain Caregivers Cooperative, and the Green Faith Ministry. This is an adaptation of the Supreme Court original jurisdiction petition regarding some of these same issues that was filed in January 2011 by Andrew Reed on behalf of Kathleen Chippy and the PCRLP. Kathleen Chippy is a Netherlands caregiver and dispensary owner and founding member of the Patient and Caregiver Rights Litigation Project. The PCRLP is a coalition of patients, caregivers, and dispensary owners who have been harmed by the passage of these new laws. Kathleen has been in the forefront of cannabis politics since 1993 when she formed Colorado's first hemp foods company. She became a provider of medical marijuana for patients and opened a caregiver business in 2009. The new laws forced her to abandon her patients and turn her energy into raising money to file this constitutional challenge. Quote, "The Constitution allows patients to choose their caregiver. The state cannot deny patients their constitutional rights by forcing them to purchase medicine at a retail marijuana store and give up all their confidentiality rights. The patients have a right to pick any compassionate caregiver they choose to provide their cannabis medicine as long as the caregiver is over 18 and not the patient's physician. The Constitution is very clear on this, and I am confident our judge will agree," says Chippy. Damian Lagoy has been Colorado's most outspoken patient for years. Damian is concerned about the state's new database system that will replace the formerly confidential registry information with a massive database and surveillance system and open to law enforcement and other government agencies. Damian is also concerned about the possible theft of his confidential medical information by other criminal elements who may use the information to harm him. Damian has been living with HIV/AIDS since 1985 and uses cannabis to treat a variety of symptoms. "We went through this 20 years ago with HIV/AIDS patients when the government decided to create a national AIDS database. People were afraid to come out and get tested because they feared their information would be made public. A lot of my friends died because they were afraid to get treatment because they didn't want to get on the list. The same thing is happening now with medical marijuana. I don't want to see patients die because their confidentiality is no longer protected and they are afraid to get their medicine, says LaGoy. Colorado Patients Alliance is a nonprofit organization working for the rights of medical marijuana patients and caregivers in Colorado. Members include a broad base of patients, caregivers, MMCs, and that's medical marijuana centers, not caregivers, other organizations, and companies that believe that a responsible and constitutional approach to the regulation of medical marijuana that benefits patients, caregivers, and the medical cannabis providers. Rico Calibri, spokesman for the CPA, says, quote, there has been much talk of compliance with the new regulations, but it is our contention that HB 10-1284 and the resulting rules must be compliant with the Colorado Constitution. Just because an MMC applicant was forced to give up their constitutional rights to apply for a license does not mean a patient has given up their rights. Did you hear that? Forced to give up their constitutional rights to apply for an application. The Rocky Mountain Caregivers Cooperative is a private cannabis patient collective which is over 8 years old and maintains relationships with over 1,000 patients throughout Colorado. Many RMCC patients lost their caregivers when the limits in HB 10-1284 were passed. The Green Faith Ministry is a compassionate care and spiritual church located in northern Colorado and led by Reverend Brandon Baker. Reverend Baker was the caregiver for over 20 low-income and indigent patients before the passage of HB 10-1284, when he was forced to give up almost all of his patients. In addition to being forced to abandon its former patients, the ministry has been faced with increasing demand for more patients who have lost their caregivers or who have had medical marijuana banned in their community. Attorney Robert J. Corey Jr., a medical marijuana legal expert who will be filing amicus support for the lawsuit, says, quote, this lawsuit will give Colorado suffering medical marijuana patients a fighting chance to obtain their doctor-ordered medicine at a reasonable cost with a reasonable selection while protecting their privacy and their constitutional rights. The massive regulatory regime created by HB 10-1284, HB 11-1043, and SB 10-109 is without precedent in America, and it is a violation of the law. This is a summary of the complaint. It says the PCRLP lawsuit filed in Denver District Court seeks to resolve the following issues. One, are patients allowed to choose any caregiver they want, or can the state enact restrictions on caregivers? Two, do the information disclosure provisions of HB 10-1284 violate patients' constitutional rights to privacy? So here we have the government creating monopolies. So last week I talked about Wilfred. Drew attention to some comments I had made with the technical advisor, and somewhat apologized for them because the fact is I hadn't seen it. Well, I saw it and it was worse than I imagined. It's showing on Hulu now, there's a link for it on my webpage. And let me see if I can just get this article up. It's called Wilfred. Just see if it's still here we go. This was published on June the 23rd in Talk of the Town. And ever noticed how often, this is by Steve Elliott, one of the biggest shills I've ever seen for the, I don't know what. I do not like this person. Do not like him. This was Talk of the Town. It was published June the 23rd, 2011. It's by Steve Elliott, who calls himself Alabama Poet. Basically, what he sits down and never mind what he does. Let's save that for another time. Well, I was going to accuse him of plagiarizing. Basically, he sits down and he copies stories from everywhere else and puts them on his site, I guess to draw advertising revenue. This appears to be one of the few things he actually wrote himself. Ever noticed how often TV gets it wrong when it comes to telling little details of marijuana culture? Inaccuracies, large and small, can diminish our enjoyment of the show because they call our attention to artifice rather than art. Well, I can assure you, those kinds of details are going to be correct in Wilfred, a new pot-based comedy debuting tonight on FX Television Network. And how am I so sure? Because what appears to be a first, the producers had the good sense to hire Cheryl Schumann, yes, the well-known cannabis activist and Kush Magazine media director, as medical marijuana consultant. Schumann tore up some marijuana plants at this normal conference down in L.A., and after that, she was no longer in charge of Beverly Hills Normal. They had a spat, and they fired her. Schumann told Toke of the Town that Wilfred is breaking new ground when it comes to public perception of cannabis use, both medicinal and recreational. Megastar Elijah Wood of Lord of the Rings fame plays Ryan, a suicidally depressed medical marijuana patient whose life is saved by an unexpected bond with a, get this, talking, pot-smoking dog, the titular Wilfred. You see, Wilfred looks like a regular old dog to everyone else, but to Ryan, he's a 6-foot-tall, anthropomorphic, recreational pot-smoker. See what they did here? We have a medicinal cannabis user and his dog, a recreational marijuana smoker. Bada-bing, both ends of the weed spectrum covered with plenty of low-hanging funny fruit just waiting to be harvested. This show will be edgy. I guarantee you it's going to offend a few people, Schumann, a 20-year veteran of Hollywood, medical marijuana patient and cancer survivor, told me. But it's also really, really funny. Written and produced by David Zuckerman of Family Guy fame, Wilfred is a great opportunity for the medical marijuana community to rebrand itself to the mass American public. As such, it features authentic dispensary interiors overseen by pot consultant Schumann. Hey, if it takes a few off-color jokes and a pot-smoking dog to get America to talk and laugh openly at cannabis, I'm all for it. Well, it looks to me like what we're doing is we're laughing at medical marijuana patients with this show. Schumann, in my discussion with her, told me that this guy was not a medical marijuana patient, but who was suicidal. My first comment was, a medical marijuana patient who's suicidal, I guess the medicine isn't working and he needs a pot-smoking dog to straighten him out, huh? Who's a recreational user? Well, no, she told me he was on pills. Well, it turns out in the show he wasn't on pills. His sister had evidently given him a bunch of sugar pills, telling him they were something else, and he tried to take too many of those. But no, he wasn't on pills either. His neighbor asked him to keep her dog, and he sees this pot-smoking dog, and so they smoke some pot, and then they go steal the neighbor's marijuana plants, and no. This show is going to evidently designed to laugh at medical marijuana patients and give some people a paycheck in the process. In my comments, I said nobody gets paid to tell the truth. I understand that. And it's certainly, this is crap. This is total crap. I'm just looking to see if I could find that if that comment is still here. Schumann. No, she just calls me a bunch of bad names in her comments. Anyway, I saw Wilfred, and it was worse than I could possibly imagine. It's basically cashing in on patients, exploiting patients by a patient, evidently. Well, the woman's had a hard time. She's got to pay the bills somehow. It's too bad she can't find an honest way to make a living. Okay, San Jose. It looks like I just may barely have enough time to talk about everything I want to talk about tonight. But if you've noticed, there's been a big brouhaha in San Jose lately. And let me see if I can get up. Well, article in the San Jose Mercury about that. And basically, they want to limit the number of dispensaries to the to 10. And and they just raised tax. I think, let me see if I can find the figures on that. Well, here we go. And it looks like the article's about to come up. This was published the 1st of July in the San Jose Mercury News. And it's titled, Requirements for San Jose's Medical Marijuana Collectives Not Likely to be Resolved Quickly. Now, if you remember, they passed a tax on medicine in San Jose, and then after that, well, let me read the article for you. I don't think it's that long. San Jose City Council has outlined its plan to limit medical marijuana sales to 10 establishments, 2 per council district. However, some obstacles remain. The city wants only 10 collectives in the city, and there are a number of operational requirements that must be built in, says Joe Horodell, director of the San Jose Planning, Building, and Code Enforcement Division. In order to meet these operational requirements, the Planning Commission met June 22nd with a medical marijuana discussion on the agenda. However, the 7 commissioners deferred their vote until the July 27th meeting because members said they need further investigation to develop appropriate land use for the establishments. Now, isn't that sweet? 15 years after the passage of the Compassionate Use Act of 1996, they need more time. Reminds me of that Santa Cruz Planning Commission meeting I went to. Was it last year when this woman, Bimbette, said, "It's all so new." It was new 15 years ago. Back to San Jose. Among the requirements the council members dictated is that each collective has its own growing operation. That's created some problems for the planning commissioners because the size of the growing area and the need for extensive power for growing cannabis also will affect land use requirements, says Hope Kahan, chair of the commission. Each facility will have to be very large, she says, because the city requires each collective have its own growing facility. We need to determine which areas are appropriate. There are other aspects that also affect land use. Council members agreed the collectives would be allowed in areas zoned commercial, general, downtown primary commercial, combined industrial commercial, and light industrial. State law requires that facilities must be 600 feet from public and private schools. The city says they must be 500 feet from any children's daycare operations and from community recreation centers, parks, libraries, substance abuse rehab centers, or another collective. In other words, anything they could think of. Police regulations stipulate that collectives must be away from pawn shops and nightclubs. Oh, for the love of God. Finally, each establishment will be required to have a zoning verification certificate. Once council members receive the Planning Commission criteria on August 9th, they are expected to debate and vote on the issue. The vote will be read again the following Tuesday. During the remainder of August and September, the application process will be implemented, and during the October-November timeframe, the 10 collectives will be selected and their registration processed. The vote, however, may not be that simple. District 6 Councilman Pierluigi Oliverio said in an interview that the money the current 100 collectives provide is important to the city. These collectives bring about $3.8 million to the city just from the Measure U tax. That doesn't include sales tax. They also contribute to jobs with about 1.2 with about 1,500 people working the collectives. This is not the number one issue facing the city, he said. We should have gotten ahead of the situation back in 2009 when I recommended we look into it. And now these facilities have proliferated. There are 100 facilities now, and it's going to be hard to get them back in the bottle. Oh, why would they want to? He said he would not be surprised if the issue is deferred again. Even if the council votes for the ordinance, it's going to take 2 years to get rid of the potential lawsuits for one reason or another, especially those collectives that aren't allowed to register. On the other side, District 1 Councilman Pete Constant told the resident there are more collectives than pharmacies in his district. I was originally against any of the collectives, but I voted to keep the number at 10, Constant said. It's important to find a way to limit the number of collectives so we have them under control. He added that he's concerned because although he knows there are many people with serious medical issues who need marijuana for their treatment, most people I run into don't fit into that category. If there are true medical values, the Food and Drug Administration should regulate the drug like any other prescription. Well, no, they won't do that because then the pharmaceutical companies would not be able to make more profits than all the 490 other businesses on the Fortune 500 combined. You know, the pharmaceuticals companies are the government. In 2001, the top 10 pharmaceutical companies on the Fortune 500 had profits in excess of the other 490 companies combined. That's why the FDA hasn't approved medical marijuana for medical use, and that's why they're still stalling. And this is just as good a place as any to start talking about this memo that Obama issued, because here we have San Jose talking about how large these 10 facilities are going to be when they reduce the number, and Obama has announced that he's going to go after large facilities and specifically use the Oakland planned mega grows as an example. The people that were being lionized by Normal planted damn money tree in Times Square last year and made it a cause celebrate. If you recall that, and Measure F in Oakland, and then these same people that I have been ragging on, Jeff Jones and the Prop 19 people. Going to have these mega groves in Oakland. In fact, I want to read Dragonfly de la Luz, who's probably wrote the most complete article about this. In a note, hopefully I can find it. Which I was... caused a significant controversy. Let me see if I can find that note. Oh, hurry up. Well... By the way, Lamar Smith of Texas is blocking the Barney Frank, Ron Paul, H.R. 2306, the text of this is now available. And I haven't gone through and worked it out yet, parsed it out, and found out and figured out exactly what it does and it doesn't do. However, someone has pointed out that it, the body of this bill mentions several, about half a dozen specific sections where it removes the word M-A-R-I-H-U-A-N-A, marijuana, spelled the old-fashioned way. And I looked up in the U.S. code, and if you type in U.S. code in Google, it should take you to Thomas online, where you can look up various codes, legislative codes. And so you put it, type in H.R. 2306, and you will get those various codes and a copy of the text. And you can look it up. Oh, and so I'm looking for this note that someone drew to my attention by Dragonfly de la Luz, Dragonfly Lioness, and still looking for it because it was the most... I guess comprehensive is the best word. Assessment of the situation. And I'm not having a lot of luck finding it right now. Let me see if this is it. Nope, this is the guidance. There's been a lot of articles about this. And I'm not getting anywhere finding what I wanted to find with regard to... Boy, it pisses me off when this happens. Let's see if I can find it this way. I'm sitting here waiting for the computer. But what I was talking about with the Barney Frank, Ron Paul bill, which they announced, it uses the word marijuana with an H, and it doesn't use the word marijuana with a J. It is in the title. But there was something like 21... 21 hits on marijuana with a J in the U.S. code, and 53 hits of marijuana with an H in the U.S. code, and so that's an interesting thing that I noticed about that. As I said, I haven't been able to parse it out yet. And I'll be damned, but I cannot find this note that Dragonfly de la Luz. Let me see if I can just look in my notes, and maybe it's there. My news feed. It's hard as hell to find anything on Facebook anymore. Have you noticed that? Just hard as hell. I use it a lot, and I'm really tired of sitting here tap dancing while I look for this note. Okay, let me try it one more time. See if I can find this. I was planning on reading this tonight. Now it's not. I can't find it. Let's see. Well, I can't find that note anymore. I guess she removed it, which is too bad. I cannot find it. This is all old stuff, so I guess I won't be reading that, and that is too bad. The article in the LA Times speaks specifically about the fact that this was prompted by the Oregon on Oakland by the Oakland actions. And a dragonfly de Luz, in her article, which I couldn't find right now, unfortunately, points out that the Oakland city attorney quit because he would not go forward with these mega grows that the city council was trying to get him to write them rules, and he just would not. Basically, he would be acting, he would be advising his client to act illegally according to the federal government. Evidently, well, she went into a long history of exactly how this all came about. And as I said, it looks like I'm not going to be able to find that here, which really angers me. What I will read from you is Bill Panzer had a couple of comments on this, and I'll read the memo if I can find it. And Bill Panzer was quoted in some articles regarding this. I've got a list of them. Again, on my web Facebook Palm Springs Bum page. I think the base citizen is probably the best one. Let's see if I can get this up real quick. Americans for Safe Access will be having demonstration on Tuesday, I believe. And by the way, on in February and then in May, the government licensed 55 entities, and I believe that was to well, at first it went out that the government had licensed, the federal government we're talking about here, and this this was May the 25th in East Bay Express, and it was the name of the article is "Meet Your New Pot Dealer, Big Pharma." Generic cannabis pills planned for wide use. And despite the U.S. government's staunch opposition to medical cannabis farms in Oakland and elsewhere, the feds have begun licensing a whole lot of large legal pot grows throughout the country. But this weed is not for cannabis dispensaries and their patients. It's for Big Pharma. The Drug Enforcement Administration told Legalization Nation in an email last week that 55 unnamed companies now hold licenses to grow cannabis in the United States, a fact that contradicts the widespread belief that there is only one legal pot farm in America operated under the DEA for research purposes. It appears as if the upswing in federally approved pot farming is about feeding the need of pharmaceutical companies who want to produce a generic version of THC pill marijuana and at least one other cannabis-based pill for a wide variety of new uses. In other words, if big corporations grow dope with the government and put it in a pill, it's medicine. But if you grow it at home or at a city-permitted pot farm and then put it in a vaporizer, it's a felony. I just wanted to draw your attention to this fact that here is documentation. The government has licensed 55 evidently large commercial entities of the kind that they want to destroy in California and as far as the indigenous medical marijuana business in California. Their excuse for issuing this memo and declaring war on medical marijuana patients for the 4th of July is because these are too big, and yet they have license 55. Now, a subsequent article says that these licenses are not to grow, but to process product that is grown at the University of Mississippi And if that's true, heaven help us, because I know how to grow it. I've researched it. And their stuff is crap. It really is. They grind it all up. Seeds, males, females. They grind it all up. They dry it in ovens. It's crap. Total crap. It'll give you a headache if you smoke it. There's pictures of it online. It's mostly seeds and stems. I swear to God, it's mostly seeds and stems. Total crap. But now I'm being slowed down. There's been a lot of articles. John, what's his name, Hoffler of the Los Angeles Times, squarely blames this on Oakland and their plans to monopolize the medical marijuana article. There's an article in the New York Times. Reason Online. Let's see if I can get these quotes by Panzer here. The Bay Citizen. I've got a whole list. I've read about a dozen articles. It looks like I'll have time to read one, maybe two, before the show ends. I knew that I wouldn't get to talk about everything tonight, and it looks like I won't. I did want to mention that there's about half a dozen marijuana stocks, and two of them made announcements just before Obama's memo. So you've got these things to think about, too. You've got GR, well, it's Glaxo Welcome. I'm just trying to pull up these little announcements that these publicly traded marijuana companies made. There's probably about a dozen of them. And as soon as I get, as soon as I can get this information up here on them, I will okay. So, the ones that made announcements last week, you've got CANA, which is Justin Hartfield and company. This is the, Justin Hartfield was the guy that last year told the Wall Street Journal that medical marijuana was a joke. So, CANA, that's one publicly traded company. MJNA is another, Medical Marijuana Inc. CMSI, Cannabis Medical Solutions Inc. They, CMSI, their big thing is providing card services so that you can do a transaction without using cash, and also providing banking and credit card services and transaction services because banks are refusing to deal with dispensaries. So CMSI, Medical Cannabis Medical Solutions, CBIS, Cannabis Science, and GRNH, Green Grow Technologies. They are peripheral. They're saying they're selling grow equipment, hydroponics. And ERBB, the Altitude Organic Corp. There's a couple of more marijuana companies. And so on July the 1st, Altitude Organics announces that they've in Colorado Springs significantly increases sales and receives best of scientific test rating. On June the 29th, Cannabis Science announces critical cancer patient Dr. Linus Wiedewer, Ph.D., cured seven times by medical cannabis. On June the 20th, Cannabis Medical Solutions announces official corporate name change to MetaSwipe and additional corporate events. On June the 20th, Medical Marijuana Inc. to acquire multiple patient recommendations clinics throughout the USA. Green Grow, this is on May the 20th, Green Grow Technologies, David L. So and forth. Anyway, so they've made a number of these companies have made announcements, so it's going to be interesting to see if the feds go after them. I going to read the Los Angeles Times article, I think, just because they point the finger so squarely. Actually, the memo itself mentions Oakland and their plans, but these people that Russ Belville and Normal have been lionizing are the ones that have brought this all down. So this is the LA Times article, and I guess everybody could find this if they wanted to, but it's Justice Department shoots down commercial marijuana cultivation. Obama administration clarifies its policy as cities such as Oakland have considered allowing large-scale privately operated farms to supply medical pot dispensaries and generate more tax revenue. Was published the 2nd of July by John Hoffler of the Los Angeles Times. With marijuana sold openly at retail stores throughout California, some advocates, pot growers, and even city officials believed authorized commercial cultivation could be next. But the Obama administration dashed that notion this week, making clear it will not allow such operations. In a letter sent Wednesday to federal prosecutors, Deputy Attorney General James M. Cole noted that some cities and states have considered plans for multiple large-scale, privately operated industrial marijuana cultivation centers and wrote that the administration's hands-off policy on medical marijuana patients was, quote, never intended to shield such activities from federal enforcement action and prosecution, even where those activities purport to comply with state law. Meanwhile, across the country, proposals to bring marijuana cultivation into the open have drawn warnings from federal prosecutors. But it was Oakland's vision of four enormous enterprises with astounding revenue projections that started the federal pushback against the thriving and increasingly bold marijuana industry. Quote, unfortunately, this is a step backward, said Joe Elford, chief counsel for Americans for Safe Access. We kind of regard this as kind of the equivalent of don't ask, don't tell. Obama made certain campaign promises, and he's not carrying through on them. Elford said the letter could embolden prosecutors in California to take on dispensaries and lead prosecutors elsewhere to take steps to derail medical marijuana distribution systems set up by the states. I would be hearing, if you get too big, we may well put a target on your back, he said. In California, some collectives have made an effort to raise their own marijuana or develop a network of patient growers. But many buy from operations hidden in warehouses, industrial buildings, hollowed-out rental homes, secluded farms, and forest lands. Until earlier this year, Oakland had pursued an ambitious cultivation plan, drawing worldwide attention. City officials imagined Oakland as the capital of a fast-emerging industry. One entrepreneur, Jeff Wilcox, hoped to convert 172,000 square feet of aging and largely empty brick buildings into a marijuana industrial park with growing and manufacturing businesses. He commissioned a report that concluded his proposal could cultivate marijuana worth $59 million a year and send as much as $3.4 million in annual taxes to the city. But in February, Melinda Haig, the U.S. attorney for the state's Northern District, warned Oakland officials that she would consider prosecuting anyone authorized by the city to set up an industrial pot farm, as well as anyone who assisted them, including property owners and financiers. Wilcox put his plans on hold, but believes the city needs to push forward. Oakland is so broke. And Oakland is going to be more broke next year and the year after, he said. Well, you know, I just want to interject here. You know, that is just a crying pity. But maybe if they didn't spend their money on foolish shit like arresting marijuana patients and prosecuting and throwing them in jail, they wouldn't have this problem. And, you know, balancing your budget, throwing money, good money after bad, taxing medicine, balancing your budget on the backs of the sick and dying is basically what you'd expect from a drug pusher. Back to the article. After Haig's threat, the city hired a law firm to rework its proposal. Under the far more restrained plan, which was unveiled Friday, only nonprofit collectives could apply for growing permits, and each collective cultivation site would be limited to 25,000 square feet. Arturo Sanchez, the assistant to the city administrator, said the proposal does not conflict with the Justice Department's position. I think they're saying we didn't envision large-scale groves for profit, he said. At no point have we said this is a profiteering endeavor. Berkeley was planning much smaller operations in the range of 5,000 square feet to 10,000 square feet. It has frozen those plans, but Mayor Tom Bates said the city intends to pursue them. We see a lot of advantages, he said, but stressed that Berkeley would not proceed without approval from local, state, and federal prosecutors. Quote, we're going to go with our eyes wide open. Bates said that having the city's collectives grow in industrial areas would be much safer, allowing Berkeley officials to do more to prevent crimes and fires caused by faulting wiring, as well as inspect the crop to ensure that it was free of pesticides and other potentially harmful substances. But he was not sanguine about the prospects. Quote, I'm under the view that the Department of Justice will never sanction this, he said. Quote, I think they're going to be the stumbling block, end quote. Isleton, a Sacramento River town with 840 residents, last month shelved plans to allow a 30,000-square-foot pot farm that was projected to pump as much as $600,000 a year into its treasury. The plan was attacked by the Sacramento County District Attorney, the county grand jury, and the U.S. Attorney for the area. The grand jury foreman said the growing operation was, quote, perched on the blurry edge of marijuana law, unquote. As a presidential candidate, Barack Obama said the federal government should not raid medical marijuana users and caregivers. 3 months after he was inaugurated, his attorney general announced that as the administration's official policy, which later was spelled out in an October 2009 letter to prosecutors, the policy in part set off the explosion of dispensaries and pot-growing operations in California. The Justice Department's letter this week halts what some saw as that next phase, commercial cultivation. In his letter, Cole indicated that he was reiterating the department's stance, but it contained a subtle shift. In the 2009 letter, the department advised prosecutors not to focus on individuals whose actions are in clear and unambiguous compliance with existing state laws, pointing to people with cancer or other serious illnesses and their caregivers as examples. The new letter cites patients and caregivers not as an example, but as the only exception, and it defines caregiver as an individual and, quote, not commercial operations cultivating, selling, or distributing marijuana, end quote. Matthew Miller, a Justice Department spokesman, said the document was intended to restate department policy after more than half a dozen letters were sent by U.S. attorneys in response to medical marijuana developments in their states. Quote, it's not really a new policy, quote, he said. Miller declined to say whether any large-scale cultivation operation, such as one run by a nonprofit patient collective, could pass muster with the federal government. Under guidelines issued by Jerry Brown when he was Attorney General, most dispensaries in California are organized as nonprofit collectives. The state's new Attorney General, Kamala Harris, declined to comment on the Justice Department letter. Her office is currently working to revise nearly three-year-old guidelines. Jane Usher, a special assistant city attorney in Los Angeles, said court cases have repeatedly shown that the city's dispensaries operate outside those guidelines. Quote, strangers, unidentified strangers, are bringing in large satchels and suitcases and bags of dried marijuana, quote, she said. The state requires collectives to grow their own marijuana, but Usher said she was awaiting clarification on whether state law requires them to grow on site. She declined to speculate on whether a collective could set up a major growing operation that would be legal under state law. Quote, I don't want to go there, she said. It's so at odds with the facts on the ground that I don't want to endorse a hypothetical. That was from the Los Angeles Times. And I'd just like to read you a Bay Citizen, I think. There's a couple of quotes here from Bill Panzer. Reason magazine also had a good article on this. This is medical marijuana advocate feels betrayed by Obama. And you got a picture here of one of the guys mainly responsible for this, Steve D'Angelo, and his Proposition 19 crap. And their plans to take over the medical marijuana market, and the marijuana market in California, and make Oakland the monopoly. D'Angelo says he feels betrayed by Obama. Well, I feel betrayed. I feel betrayed by Normal. I feel betrayed by Russ Belville. I feel betrayed by Richard Lee. I feel betrayed by Steve D'Angelo. I feel betrayed by Osterdam U. Panzer says that he believes that the Bay Area medical marijuana growers under the jurisdiction of U.S. Attorney for the Northern District of California, Melinda Haig, would remain relatively safe. But in the Eastern District, which encompasses most of the conservative inland California, Panzer said it's a different story. That's where the feds arrested Jan Ebiam, the former Oakland potrepreneur, last week for two large medical marijuana growing operations. Tomato farmers decided to grow marijuana. Panzer summed up the federal government's position on medical marijuana, which still cautions against prosecuting patients who are seriously ill, as, quote, "Don't indict anyone who won't live long enough to get through trial," end quote. And I could talk a lot more about this, but it looks like my time is running out. So I guess that's it tonight for Canada on Cannabis. If anybody's listening, I hope you enjoyed the show. And let's see where my... I just lost my music, so let's try to get some music up here. Some exit music. And be sure and check out my blog. That's www.palmspringsbum.org/blog. And that's my show for the evening, this evening. Tune in next week.
like a chip is soaked with the tears because a baby's life has been revoked. The bond is broke, got so choke up info. Kiss on the close up, Mr. Wizard can't reform. No, God!